Our next case this morning is number 064263, Marconi against Astru. Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Chase Marconi. In this claim, the plaintiff specifically is arguing that the administrative law judge improperly analyzed the onset of any possible disability for Mr. Marconi. Administrative law judge in her decision mentions approximately seven times that there's no medical evidence from prior to the date last insured showing that the claimant had sought medical treatment, which is true. The claimant had not sought medical treatment prior to his date last insured. But that's where the ALJ's analysis was legally incorrect, because the ALJ should have determined whether or not Mr. Marconi was disabled as of the time of her decision. And then if she found that he was so disabled, utilize Social Security ruling 8320 to determine when his disability began. That's the scheme that's set up by the commissioner. In the regulation 20 CFR 404.15.20, the regulation states that there's a set order with which the administrative law judge is to analyze disability. And that is she is to determine, or he is to determine, whether or not the claimant is disabled. And then, if she determines that the claimant is disabled, under the ruling, there's specific guidelines that she has to follow to determine when the disability began. In this case, the administrative law judge did not make a finding whether the psychiatric evidence established that Mr. Marconi was disabled. She went right to the period of time prior to the expiration of his insured status and determined that because there was no psychiatric treatment at that time, that she would find the claimant not disabled. Now, this court has found in numerous cases that contemporaneous medical evidence is not necessary for a finding of disability, as long as you have medical evidence establishing the disability at some point in time. That lay testimony is sufficient for a claimant to be found disabled prior to the date that their insured status has expired. I think most recently in the case of Allard versus Barnhart, this case made that specific finding, relying on a previous case of Wilder versus Chater. The administrative law judge found that Mr. Marconi testified that he had significant limitations because of his chronic anxiety and schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder. And she stated in her decision that that may conceivably describe his current condition. So actually in the ALJ's decision, she acknowledges that the plaintiff may have been disabled at that time. But then instead of following the requirements of the ruling, she went right to the fact that there was a lack of medical evidence, which is a legally incorrect basis for finding Mr. Marconi not disabled. Now, to some extent, the ALJ's decision was based on her credibility finding. And although she states that there were several convincing factors that Mr. Marconi lacked full credibility, in fact, she only mentions one factor. And again, that factor is that there's nothing in the medical evidence suggesting that Mr. Marconi sought medical treatment prior to the expiration of his insured status. And again, this court has found in numerous cases that claimants with mental impairments can be found disabled even prior to the time of their first treatment and the first diagnosis. In the Wilder case, there was 5 or 6 years after the claimant alleged disability that she was first diagnosed in that case with depression, and yet it was found that the ALJ should have relied on 8320 to make that determination. In addition, Social Security ruling 96-7P specifically states that an ALJ must not draw any negative inferences from a claimant's failure to seek treatment unless that ALJ first considers the reasons that the claimant has provided for not seeking treatment. And Mr. Marconi provided two reasons in this case. First, he didn't know what was wrong with him. He was having these feelings, feeling anxious, feeling nervous, feeling upset, not wanting to go out of the house, but he thought it was something that would pass. When it didn't pass, he decided maybe he needed to try to go out and work, that that would actually make him feel better. He worked for 1 month and had to quit his job because he was too nervous and anxious at work. His father testified that he and the plaintiff's mother wanted the plaintiff to get help, that they knew that he needed help, but they had no insurance for him and he had no money. It seems clear that the father actually had made phone calls, as the father testified, because he knew that it was going to cost between $300 and $500 for an initial evaluation and then $90 for a follow-up treatment, and they just didn't have the money to pay for it. The ALJ should have considered that before she found the claimant not credible because he didn't seek treatment. And then in terms of the testimony of the father, which in this case was very critical testimony, because it was Joseph Marconi who was able to place the date as to when his son started having these problems. He said that it was 3 to 4 years before the date of the hearing that his son started feeling nervous and anxious and not wanting to go out of the house, staying up all night looking out of the windows and the doors because he was afraid somebody was going to come into the house. He knew approximately when it started because it happened shortly after the plaintiff's wife left and took his children. And it was at that point that he started going downhill. And yet, the ALJ actually doesn't make a credibility finding concerning Joseph Marconi's testimony. What she says is that she has to take into consideration the close family relationship, that it's a father testifying in his son's case. But that's the only thing that she mentions. She provides no other reason for finding that Mr. Marconi's testimony was not credible. And given the scheme that the commissioner has set forth in the rulings, testimony of family members is held to be important. And in Social Security 8320, in fact, the ALJ is mandated to consider the testimony of family members as to the onset of disability and the onset of symptoms. So the mere fact that Joseph Marconi was testifying in his son's case was by itself not sufficient to find him to be not a credible witness. And for these reasons, the plaintiff requests that the ALJ's decision be reversed and the matter be remanded for additional proceedings. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. We'll hear now from Ms. Sayen.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Karen Sayen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. In this case, in order to be entitled to benefits, Mr. Marconi had to demonstrate that he was disabled on or before June 30, 2002, the expiration of his insured status. In addition, he had to show that his disability continued for at least 12 months. After considering the record evidence, the ALJ reasonably concluded that Mr. Marconi, in fact, did not make such a showing. Her decision was supported by an abundance of evidence, including Mr. Marconi's statements regarding when his symptoms began. He actually testified at the hearing that his symptoms began when he was working at JCPenney, which was a job that he held several months after the critical period here. She also considered his numerous inconsistent statements. She also considered his denials of substance abuse, as well as the minimal medical evidence here. The evidence showed he did not seek any treatment prior to the expiration of his insured status. In addition, the record does not contain any retrospective diagnosis or opinion from any doctor regarding his condition as of the critical period. Moreover, two state agency reviewing doctors, as well as a medical expert who testified at the administrative hearing, agreed that there was insufficient evidence to establish that Mr. Marconi had a disabling impairment as of the expiration of his insured status. Given that evidence, the ALJ reasonably concluded that Mr. Marconi had not satisfied his burden. Mr. Marconi claims that the ALJ's analysis was flawed because she didn't follow the procedures articulated in Social Security ruling 8320. However, importantly, that ruling is not applicable here because the ALJ never concluded that Mr. Marconi was disabled at any time. While Mr. Marconi suggests that she might have hinted at that in her decision, that clearly is not the case as indicated in her decision. If you read that decision as a whole, it's clear that she was not finding that Mr. Marconi was currently disabled. To the contrary, in particular on page 19 of the transcript, she specifically references the medical expert's testimony in which there was an indication that even at this current time, there was not an indication that he was currently disabled. A few pages later, on page 21 of the decision, she talks about the evidence both the lack of the evidence before the relevant period as well as the medical evidence after that, and she has good reason to question that evidence. Moreover, at the close of the administrative hearing on page 200 of the transcript, it's clear from her characterization of the statements that she made to Mr. Marconi that she, in fact, was not finding him currently disabled. As a result, this court has previously held in the Sheck case the exact facts that we have present here. Sheck specifically held that this ruling at issue, Social Security ruling 8320, just simply is not applicable in this particular case. Mr. Marconi has pointed out that the judge in this case did, in fact, make several references to the fact that there was no medical evidence during the critical period. That was an important factor for her to consider, and it was proper for her to reference that in her decision. However, that's not all she did. She also looked at all of the evidence that postdated the expiration of his insured status. And given that evidence, she reasonably concluded that it did not allow her to make any kind of a reasonable conclusion as to the relevant period here. She also went ahead and got a medical expert at the hearing to help her with any kind of decisions or analysis she needed to make about the medical evidence. So in other words, she properly noted there was no evidence from the critical period, medical evidence, and she also considered all of the evidence that postdated it. In addition, her credibility finding was reasonable and consistent with the record evidence. She properly considered a variety of factors, including the lack of medical evidence, both before and after the relevant period, the critical period. She noted the medical treatment. She noted inconsistencies in the record, as well as his statements that his symptoms began after the critical period. Mr. Marconi has indicated at the argument today and is in his briefs that perhaps she only made her credibility finding based on only one factor, namely that there wasn't any evidence from the critical period. However, if you look on page 20 of the transcript in her decision, she specifically says that she's considering other factors. She says that in addition to this weak medical evidence, here are some other things that I'm going to consider. And at that point in time, she specifically talks about Mr. Marconi's statements, including his testimony that was quite contradictory at the administrative hearing. He initially said, for example, that he never left the house. He later admitted that he, in fact, did sneak out of the house after he'd taken money from his parents to go buy drugs and alcohol. He initially said he never used public transportation, though he later admitted that he, in fact, used public transportation by himself when he went to go buy drugs and alcohol. This case, as Sheck has held, is controlling here. The ruling is not applicable because the administrative law judge never found Mr. Marconi disabled at any time. And nonetheless, the ALJ's analysis was, in fact, consistent with that ruling. She considered all of the factors that are described in that ruling, such as his allegations, his work history, the evidence, and she even consulted with a medical expert. If the court has no questions at this time, it asks that the court affirm the ALJ's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Sam. Mr. Schultz has how much time remaining? Thank you.
Plaintiff believes that the Sheck case is not controlling because in Sheck, the administrative law judge made a specific affirmative finding that the plaintiff was not ever disabled. Plaintiff agrees that where an ALJ finds the plaintiff is never disabled, there's no question as to the onset of disability because there's no disability. In this case, the administrative law judge did not find Mr. Marconi was not disabled at any time. And she specifically, in that basis, doesn't explain why she would have rejected the opinion of the consulting examiner, which Social Security sent the plaintiff to see a psychiatrist in June of 2003. And that psychiatrist diagnosed the claimant with chronic anxiety with psychotic symptomatology and opined that he was totally unemployable. The ALJ doesn't explain why she rejected that opinion, if in fact she did reject it. In addition, the factors on page 20 of the administrative record, which is in the ALJ's decision concerning credibility, the ALJ doesn't indicate that she relies on those factors. She summarizes the evidence, including many favorable factors to Mr. Marconi and a couple of inconsistencies. But she never states that she's relying on those inconsistencies, but in fact specifically states she's relying on the one factor that plaintiff indicated before. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.